was a sergeant, I was the chief sniper instructor of the unit. I would hold myself in high regard, and I would say to myself, how would a special forces operator look and conduct themselves in this situation? Would they be fucking sat down, feeling sorry for themselves, looking like a bag of shit? No, they wouldn't. They'd be like, no, I've got high standards, I'm a special forces fucking operator, I'm in this position, I put myself in this position, I deserve to be here.
Anthony Staz Staziga served 13 years of distinguished and decorated military service, 10 within the special forces, before founding the multi-million pound technical clothing company, Through Dark. You may have seen him on the SAS Who Dares Wins TV show, and he's now a published author to boot with his book, The Hard Road Will Take You Home.
Multiple combat tours, successful stuff that I'd done in my career that was great, and I left at a pivotal moment with Louis, and we decided to, you know, okay, the wind's out of my sail, 33 years old, let's close that chapter. Now what the fuck are we going to do?
So I'm going to start off with a quote for the book, and then I'm just going to get your opinion on something. So, quote is, "We were regarded as the best of the best in military terms, but we were also self-described bastard sons of illegitimate parents. And pretty much everyone in Tier 1 service had overcome extreme hardship, either in the line of fire or because of some other challenging life event. Many of us were fuck-ups or had fucked up in some way. What sets us apart from the ordinary soldier was that every operator had learned to move past those negative events in order to grow and progress." So you mention throughout the book a number of challenging life events that you personally had, from losing your mum, your parents splitting up, being uprooted to another part of the country, being bullied, the football injury that derailed a potential career. When you add in some of the graphic experiences you had in the military that you detail in the book, and maybe some of the challenges you've had with Through Dark as well, building up to this question, what's the hardest challenge you've had to overcome personally, and maybe why as well?
Wow, there's quite a lot to kind of
unpack
and get into there. But that's a great question. I guess, if we look at kind of life and the beginning and where I started and kind of where I am now, and with the value of hindsight and looking back and all the kind of things that I've learned along the way, there's so many sort of golden nuggets in there for me looking back. And I guess with age comes a little bit more experience and understanding of why these things are the way they are. And at the time, you can't necessarily see them for what they are, or ultimately what the lesson is during that moment. But I don't think there's one singular thing within my life or throughout my life up until this point that has helped define kind of who I am. They're each sort of blocks or bricks that I've added and utilized and allowed me to, I guess, progress. And for me, the main thing is around kind of how you formulate ideas and off the back of that problems. So, you know, life's fucking hard, isn't it? And I guess one of my first major childhood memories is having quite a bad accident on my push bike. And I don't know how old I am. I'm maybe 5 or 6 years old. So you're just kind of formulating those. It's harder sometimes to think back at what's your first childhood memory? I don't know. But for me, it was probably that. It was terracing down a hill at max chat on my new push bike. And I remember getting just to the base of the bottom of this quite steep hill and finding my front brake, which is a new bike. Oh. So I've applied too much fist, and I've gone straight over the handlebars. And I remember sort of flying through the air vividly and then hitting the deck and hitting my forehead against the pavement. But the bike also was tumbling after me and followed up and hit me again. So I ended up ultimately kind of headbutting the pavement and being knocked out. I was unconscious. And then sort of remember, again, sort of thinking back now, it's strange, but sort of coming to, and I'm obviously in a bit of a pickle. I've scraped all up and down my arms and legs. But the main thing is, I could feel the warmth of the blood all over my face. I'd opened up the whole front of my head, and I've been knocked out, and I'm sort of coming to and sort of just having that feeling of what has just happened. But I do remember people driving in the cars past me, slowing down, looking at me, and fucking driving off.
That's the worst.
I don't want to deal with that. Yeah. That looks serious, you know, and I've got somewhere to be. Anyway, somebody must have eventually stopped because an ambulance was called. And then I remember an ambulance coming, going to hospital, and then having a pretty traumatic experience in the hospital of being tied to the bed because they're obviously trying to clean the wound. All I can see is all these people around me, doctors, nurses, needles, trying to, you know, probably put anesthetic in and clean what is it's quite a large open wound in my the top of my forehead. And they're trying to shave my hair. They're trying to now stitch up, you know, and I've got a horrendous scar on the front. It's a game of snakes and ladders life, isn't it? You know, you do something within the training cycle of the Marines and you're accepted within the training environment. Mm-hmm. You know, you're giving you your Green Beret and you're at the, in a training perspective in, at Limston, you're at the top of the tree, you know, or you've completed the board, you know, at the top.
Yeah.
You then join your respective unit and then you hit the snake back down to the bottom and now you've got to learn like and earn your spurs essentially. Mm. You know, you're a new kid, you're the new guy.
Yes,
you've got your Green Beret, yes, you get the respect that you deserve and that you've earned, and you're a part of that band of brothers and you're a Royal Marines commando, which means a lot. But also you now need to show and prove and earn your within your career and what you do. So operationally you need to earn your spurs and earn that respect. You know, respect is earned. So we go on tour, do all this stuff, and the sniper course is another thing. It's prestigious. You get to sew your sniper's stuff onto your uniform, and it's prestigious within the Royal Marines. It's like, wow, you're a sniper. Like, that's highly regarded, very, very difficult course and prestigious. But I was using that because in the tour, that first tour in the Marines was my first exposure to Special Forces. I saw these guys rock up on the gate, driving through civilian profile, flannel shirts, different caches, different weapons, comms kit, long hair, beards. Who the fuck are those cool dudes? It's the SBS, you know, Special Boat Service. And so that was my kind of first introduction, really sparked my interest. I started reading more books and all this kind of stuff, started finding out more. And it's something then that seed's planted. And I knew that was planted. And I knew about them. I knew who they were, never seen them. And the seed was planted. Now all I needed to do was add water. And I did that myself. I started looking at the Special Forces selection course, what that would look like, what I would need to do physically and mentally to prepare, or what I thought I needed to do to prepare for that course. And for me, I did the sniper course as a prerequisite, as a building block to say, am I good enough physically, mentally, and at a high enough standard in terms of soldiering ability to even contemplate going on selection? I passed that, so for me, that was another tick for me.
And what attracted you to that? Because it was the best of the best. And
it was. Okay. It was like, okay, the Marines is great. You know, it's prestigious. What's the next thing? What's the best thing I can do in the military? You know, and it was that. It was Special Forces selection. So I did that. I undertook that. And I went through came down here and did a briefing course. A briefing course is a week-long course that's a chance for those guys to look at you, but you to look at them.
Yeah.
And it's a week of beastings, in short. You do loaded test marches with loads of weight on your back from point A to point B, and then there's some soldier stuff, some map reading, some basic stuff. To a high standard, very high standard. And there's certain things you have to do. At the end of that, they'll say, yes, you are fit enough, you look like you have the aptitude to be loaded onto selection. So it's kind of a shit filter before you even get onto selection. And then I went on selection in summer of 2008, which was a whole different world.
It's interesting, like, a couple of the things you said, a couple of similar things that just jogged a few memories in my head, and I'd completely forgotten until you said about your bike accident. Mm. And I can literally now visualize me going over the handles of my racer on a slope like that and hitting and going home, and I'm going, what's that in your head? And it was like pieces of gravel embedded in my forehead, and I was probably in hindsight concussed. I wasn't knocked out, but I was concussed. But I'd totally forgotten like that deep-seated trauma until you brought up your story.
Sorry, I've just brought back some trauma,
You have, yeah.
But, and this is a really long... We've kind of segued a little bit into different stuff here, but to answer your original question about what's the hardest challenge there, my life has just been challenge after challenge, a series of very difficult challenges that I've set myself. Some I've set myself, but some have been set for me. And have been out of my control. So, I enroll into the UK Special Forces selection, and that's a long, sort of arduous physical. That's the hardest physical thing that I've ever put myself through, and mentally at that time, because it's hard. And to reference my boys again, it's for me, life's all about exposure, and what's hard for some people is unfathomable for other people. If you think about, if I ask you what's the hardest thing you've ever done, you'll come up with something and an example.
Yeah.
I asked my 12-year-old boy, what's the hardest, he come home one day, I've had the most difficult day. And I was laughing at it, sort of chuckling away, and talk me through it. Why is it difficult? Well, this and that didn't, and this and that. And, you know, I'm laughing and I can see he looks at me and I shouldn't have been laughing. I knew that.
Yeah,
and
he's like,
it's not funny. Why are you laughing? And I'm like, that's not hard, mate, you know. But then I'm comparing it to what I feel. But to him, that is hard.
At that moment in time,
that is the hardest thing.
Agreed.
That he feels like he's dealing with.
Yeah.
And you can't belittle that.
No, you got to have empathy for that.
You have to. Yeah. But understand that that is genuinely the hardest thing that he's probably dealt with or is doing. But it's on that sliding scale of what other people find is hard or difficult or not hard. And how do you do that? You do that through exposure, through putting yourself in difficult situations that challenge you physically and mentally. And that's what we talk about, the leap of faith, in the first thing of the book, about, you know, screw it, just doing it. Just doing something that's difficult, you know, and we should always be doing that daily, you know, to ourselves, challenging yourself. Don't rest on your laurels. And I've always sort of, looking back now, I've always done that. So we do selection and it's kind of like, okay, that's the hardest military course you can do. Hands down, the hardest thing that you can do. And it's, you know, the percentage rate and the failure rate is horrific. It's so high, you know, for context, 240 people that have already been pre-selected, that are already very, very good soldiers in their own right. They're snipers, they're, you know, corporals, sergeants, they've had combat operational tour experience, you know, they're from the Marines and the paras, you know, these are hardened, very good soldiers.
Yeah.
And out of the 240 that turned up on my selection, six of us passed for the SBS, you know.
Wow.
So, and don't get me wrong, you need a little bit of, some people believe in luck, they don't believe in luck, you know, you do need the rub of the green, call it what you want, luck, preparation, whatever.
Yeah.
Because there are things on that course that test you physically further than you've ever going to be tested in your life. And all it takes is one bad step. You know, people rolling an ankle. I rolled an ankle and everybody's dealing with some form of injuries through the selection process. But, you know, another example is you go to the jungle and somebody gets bitten or they have a small cut which becomes infected, which means they have to be pulled off the course. And that's just, come on, you know. And
definitely.
And then they have to they have to go back on, and can they do it, and mentally and everything else. So that whole period was great and really defined me as an individual, as the person that I am today. It's given me a self-belief that is untouchable. It is something that is, I know I can do it. I know I can do it. I've done that. I've done far worse. So anything
that
I'm doing and looking forward to now is easy. You know, or if it's not easy, well, how do I adjust my brain to make it so that it's easier and that it's achievable?
People who, you know, regular listeners to the show will know I've banged on about this for ages, but I remember doing something around lockdown called 75 Hard by a guy called Andy Frazella in the States. And doing that 75 Hard and then, you know, believing I could do anything, then doing the marathon and thinking, I can fucking do anything. It's a really interesting mindset. And I wonder, you know, how many people truly believe what they're truly capable of?
I think this self-limiting belief, a lot of people, and we idolise other people, don't we? We look at sports people and go, I can't do, wow, look at that person. That's just, it's so impressive, it's impossible.
Yep.
And that's why we idolise celebrities and sports stars and all the, oh my gosh, it's unattainable, unachievable. But what the key is in what you've just said. It's about the discipline to... And it's boring. Training is boring. Going to the gym is fucking boring, you know. But being consistent and having a plan and being disciplined to see that plan through, built up slowly, you know, it's that the classic thing of, it's all right for you. You've made, you know, if you keep turning up after 10 years, you'll be an overnight success, won't you? And everybody's heard that saying before, and that phrase. But people now, and social media's got a lot to blame for this, but. And people as well, if they look deep down inside themselves and ask hard questions of themselves, the answers are all there. And they know it. They just don't want to face it. And they go, like, I can't because of... And they put excuse. I've got kids. Exactly. I've got to do this. There's not enough hours in the day. I work. Yeah. I'm tired. You know, I've got an injury. I'm ill. I'll start that when I get fit. Mm. I can't run a marathon. Well, look what you did. If you just... And I say this in the book. If you break stuff... Selection... Going on Special Forces selection, if you look at the whole of selection in its entirety and you read everything about it, you think, I can't do that. That is so fucking difficult and so hard for such a protracted long period of time. I can't physically and mentally do that.
But it's broken down.
You break it down. And some days, you're on selection, you're breaking it down to the next 100 fucking meters, which is 30 seconds, a minute. And wow. You think, I don't want to bring my head up to look how far I've got to fucking go. Yeah. I just need to look in front of me and take one step. Can I take 10 steps? Yes, I can. Take 10 steps, go that far, reassess. Yeah. And there's days like that where you go, in the jungle when you're doing all these drills and you're, that was the most physically and mentally fatigued I'd ever been. And just having moments of looking around at other people and going, I've got nothing left. I'm Ian Beale. I've got nothing left, you know. And you just look, but you do. You find that reserve and you just think, I'll just make it to the next bit. I'll go to the next checkpoint and I'll see how I feel. I'll fucking reassess. I'll have a drink of water. I'll have a little reward. Give myself a little reward, a Mars bar or whatever it is. And but you do that. And that's what the 75 does. It says, I'm not asking you to do a lot. I'm just asking you to do these small little things every day and be consistent. And be accountable for it as well. So you go, shit, all right, okay, I can do that. Break it, but you don't look at not even the whole day. You go, right, first 45-minute session I've got to do. I'm planning it in at this time. I'm going to get all my kit out, all my fucking shorts, T-shirt, get all that prepped. I've got all my breakfast will be ready. I can prep this, I can do that. And there's days when I turn up to the gym and I'm on my own and it's fucking for a great period of time right now. It's cold outside. And you think, I don't want to train. Yeah. I don't want to train. My brain, that little fucking chimp's going, Staz, you don't need to train. You're fit. You trained yesterday. You don't need to do it. Have a day off. It fucking whispers in your ear. That inner bitch, you've just got to, go, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because you don't become fit or healthy or strong or robust through one training session. You know that. Logically, that doesn't make sense. Mm. And I know also if I do miss a session, it's not going to affect me too much, but that'll start compounding. I'll miss one, then I'll miss two, then it's okay to miss three. And then it's okay, and if you do get yourself to the gym session, I did it yesterday and I smiled to myself because I was training again on my own in the gym and I'm doing my little circuit. I've come onto the sled, push, pull. I don't have to push it as far as I don't have to go to the end because no one's here. No one's watching. You know, there's no accountability. The only person I'm dealing with is myself.
Yeah.
But I've got high expectations of myself and high standards. Mm. I'll go and jump on the pull-up bar. I've set myself a goal of doing 10 pull-ups. I get to 5, 6, 7, and this is now the fifth or sixth set. So you're tired. And you think, 10 seems hard now. Yeah. I'll just do 8. And that little fucking thing in your brain, let's just do 8. It's fine. You've already done all these other 10s. It doesn't matter. This is an extra set. No, just fucking do 10 and be disciplined, you know, and be accountable for that as well. And there's beauty in that. And if you look at a marathon as well, when you go out for a run, oftentimes if I go out for a run, I'll say, I want to do 5K. I'm going for a run. I've managed to get myself into this position. It's fucking pissing it down outside. It's freezing. I've driven to the car park. I've come this far. I've had my coffee. I'm in the car, I've scoreboarded because I put my heated seat on and the fucking heating and the steering wheel, and I'm thinking, fuck, it's freezing, it's fucking saying -1. It's -1 outside. And I'm going, right, fucking get out of the fucking car, put your fucking AirPod in, put your tunes on, or your podcast, set yourself the goal of doing a minimum of 5K. Right, we can do that. It's 25 minutes. That's fucking easy. And then you get to 5 and you think, well, wouldn't it be good to do 8K? 8K would be really good. But what would be gold standards if I could do? I'd be really happy. And then you push a little bit further. Yeah. But you'd keep doing these things and you break them down. And thinking about a marathon, right? To run, I could probably just cuff a marathon now because I've been training and I keep myself fit and active. But I'd have to think about how I train for that and adapt my current training cycle and roles. But you don't think about running 26.2 miles. You go, well, let's break this down into chunks. And even when you do something, I did the Bournemouth Half Marathon recently, you just break it down into four miles, eat, drink. And then you think about all the other stuff that you've got to do to enable you. And to your point there, you get to 18 miles is that bonk sort of stage, isn't it?
It is.
The body's going, what the fuck are we doing? We're not made for this. We're not trained for this. You know, you're not set up physiologically for that and you've not trained for it. And also to add to your worries and concerns, your water's blown up. But at that point, you could go, no, that's it. I can't continue because I've got no water. Or you think, I've got no food, I've got no electrolytes. But there's always ways to work around and tell yourself that you can fucking do something.
I was going to ask this question later, but it's good to ask it now. There's in the book, you talk about, and I kind of wish I knew this at the time, actually, of when you experience hardship, when you experience pain, taking yourself somewhere else, and I think you made the analogy of building yourself a house or something. And I remember last year I did the New York Marathon, and I again it was November and they had a frigging heat wave. You know, the year before it was something like 7 degrees when the marathon on. It was like 27 degrees. People were being cut into ambulances at like before you've even hit 10 miles, you know, and you're just thinking, how do I get through this again? And you just kind of try to break it down. And for me, I end up with like, there's like an angel and a devil on each shoulder. I haven't got one voice in my head. I've got bloody two, yeah, you know, and one's going, quit, and the other one's going, you know, you can do it. And I'm trying to learn how to, you know, different bits of your body, and you'll know this, obviously, but different bits of your body start shutting down. You're like, okay, my right calf doesn't work. My left quad doesn't work. And for me, I was able to kind of compartmentalize that, if that makes sense. But I'd love to have known how to visualize, like you said, actually focusing on something else and taking your mind completely away from that.
Yeah. So that, the example you gave there about building a house actually was on selection when I was on the resistance to interrogation phase. So you're on the run for 5 days after the jungle. You're absolutely on the bones of your ass. You know, you're tired, physically, mentally. You know, you're at your lowest. And then you go on the run for 5 days. You're being chased. You've got minimum food, water, all that kind of stuff. And at the end of it, you're eventually caught. You're then put into 36 hours of intense professional interrogation. And that is probably the biggest kick in the balls and the biggest surprise on selection for me, because you are left to your own devices, you're in your own head, you know, you're hooded, you know, and you're in a stress position, you have the noise on in the background, and you've got nothing but your own thoughts to deal with. And then that's when those voices really amplify. And that's all you can hear is that chimp going, what are you fucking doing? Why are you doing this to yourself? You've come far enough. You've got nothing to prove. It doesn't matter. You've done yourself proud. Like, how long have you been? You've got so much further to go. And that's when you have to really dig deep and compartmentalize what you're doing, why you're doing it. And there's two sort of elements to it, which for me, the why has to be stronger than any of those fucking voices. Why am I doing this? And you always have to revert back to that. Why? Why do I want to do this? And what does the end look like? Can I take short-term pain for long-term gain? Can I suffer now to have the rewards later on? And that's what a lot of people struggle with. Mm. They're not prepared to suffer short-term for long-term gain. And they think, fucking, because everything's easy now, isn't it, in the world? Everything's convenient, you know. Yeah. And
on demand.
On demand, yeah. Everything is fucking, and rather than chasing comfort, we should be going, no, I want to make myself comfortable, because it adds layers of resilience to myself. It adds another layer and armor to myself and to my mind.
I love that.
And I've said this before, but, you know, you can break me fucking physically and all the stuff that I do, but I control my mind, and you can't break me mentally, because I know how strong my mind is, and I know how far I can push myself and what I've been through, and I know what my mind is capable of. Yes, you need physical fitness. That's a given, and you do that through training and all the other stuff that you do, and make yourself physically fit and robust. But the mind it's a fucking big mental game. Selection is probably, you know, 80% mind, 20% body, you know. And that, you know, and when I was in that moment, I had those thoughts of going, I need to take myself away from my current discomfort. Like, the discomfort is just screaming at you in these stress positions, you know. It's just horrific. And you're dealing with stuff 30 seconds a minute, and you know that you've got 36 hours, and you've not slept. You are on the bones of your ass. And I started building a house. I was like, I just fucking, you're hallucinating as well by this point, and you're hearing all sorts. But I was like, I'm going to build a house. I'm literally going to build it. Foundations up, brick by brick, room by room. I'm going to decorate all the rooms. I'm going to do all this stuff. And do you know what? Looking
Where did
back,
that come from?
Fuck knows. But looking back, it was a beautiful house. But by the, and it probably only wasted an hour. Right. But it was a welcomed hour, but then I start hallucinating about being in the house and what I'm doing, the family there, and everything, and why I'm doing it. It then linked back into my why. You know, it's a better future. It's something that, you know, is bigger and better than me, and that's where I kind of use that visualization. And visualization is a very good point that we can touch on, because I didn't know until later on in my life that I did a lot of visualization, and I'd started early on in football, but for the most part, it was positive. And I didn't realize how impactful that was and how beneficial it was for me as a person. Most of the things that I was playing football at high level, England schoolboys, all these professional clubs. And the night before the game, you know, you're nervous, you're thinking, that's all you're thinking about the game and everything else. And how am I going to perform? I need to perform, and I have to do this. And I just want to make sure that I perform to the best of my ability, you know, for me personally, but also for the team. I don't want to let people down. Well, what does that look like? Okay, I've got to look like this. When I've got the ball, I would visualize how I'd receive the ball, how I'd open my body, what a what a pass would look like, a good pass, and it was constantly in my head, pass, pass, from my feet to their feet. You know, I would control a ball, it would be close to me, I'd push the ball out, I would, and then I'd run, I'd be visualise myself running past players with the ball, I'd visualise myself making space, I'd visualise myself scoring, winning every header. I'd just visualise it constantly over and over in my head. And for the most part, it was 99% positive. It was positive visualization and affirmation in my head.
Then?
Oh, that thing in my head going, you're not good enough.
Okay,
you're not good enough. Like, you're not quick enough. Maybe the players are going to be better than you. You don't deserve to be here. And I'd be like, no, I do. I've proved that I do deserve to be here. Yeah. So I was doing that all the way through, and I did it in my military career as well. And on selection, when I was, you know, in the jungle as an example, back to that point where your soldiering ability is looked at and it's scrutinized like 24/7, you know, in your team of four, you've got a DS with your directing staff with you, and they are watching you like a hawk. That's their job, and they're assessing you. Everything that you do, are you professional? Do you know, have you got a good bearing? Do you know what you're doing? You know, is everything fucking stowed away? The basics done to a high standard? Can you navigate? Can you soldier well? Do you communicate well? You know, how's your appearance? You know, all these things are just constantly checked, check, and you know that.
Yeah.
So for me in my head, rather than thinking I'm Stars, I'm a sniper, I would hold myself in high regard, and I would go onto those, onto the course, onto selection, or into the jungle, and I would say to myself, how would a special forces operator look and conduct themselves in this situation? Would they be fucking sat down, feeling sorry for themselves, looking like a bag of shit, have kit everywhere? Would they be fucked? Would they be feeling sorry for them? No, they wouldn't. They'd be like, no, I've got high standards, I'm a special forces fucking operator, I'm in this position, I've put myself in this position, I deserve to be here, I've trained for this. How am I going to hold myself? Mm-hmm. And how would that look? If I was a directing staff, looking at special forces soldiers, would they be fucking moaning? Would they be fucking crying? Would they be weak? Would they be not communicating effectively in times of stress or in arduous conditions? What would their kit and equipment be look like? How would they be looking after themselves personally, you know, and professionally? Mm. And that's how I visualised myself passing and being, you know, a successful candidate on that selection process.
So it's interesting because, you know, talking about the other stuff we were just talking about there with building resilience, building that armor, etc. The thing that I struggle with is being able to actually visualize. You know, how do you get yourself in that state of mind? And I've read books where there's, you know, studies of people, you know, playing basketball and those who didn't have a ball, but they just visualized shooting hoops, and the success rate was the same, if not better, than the guys who were practicing. Yep. And it's like, do you have to get yourself into some kind of like flow state or something to visualize and you know, do you have to do it? Is it more successful to do it in that kind of a detail, because then it's more likely to be able to come true and have that success?
Like that manifestation thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think, exactly. It is.
And it's a bit bullshit. I don't really use that word or that terminology, but it is applicable in certain situations, because there's things now that I've done since I've left that I'm pushing myself, and it's easy to rest on your laurels, isn't it? And I talk about that in terms of what did I do when I left the tip of the spear. I was a sergeant, I was the chief sniper instructor of the unit, you know, prestigious position, and I'd had a great career, decorated career, the 10 years, multiple combat tours, successful stuff that I'd done in my career that was great, and I left a pivotal moment with Louis, and we decided to, you know, okay, the wind's out of my sail, we've got plenty of gas in the tank, 33 years old, let's close that chapter. Now what the fuck are we going to do, you know? And the easy segue for us both was to, and we did this when we left, just to manage our own cash flow personally and professionally into the business. We worked with cherry pick jobs, basically, for that were close protection jobs, and we worked with the NFL, the NBA, the Super Bowls. We looked after the owners, the team players, you know. It was really well paid. It was prestigious jobs, you know, as well. Looking back, I was there, you know, in Atlanta for the Super Bowl when the Eagles won, and I was looking after Hugh Laurie, the owner, you know, and his wife took them down to the pitch when they won, all this kind of stuff. It's great, but it's not what we wanted to do. That was just a stepping stone and a filler for, you know, what ultimately was and is Through Dark today.
Yeah,
but it's hard, mate, isn't it? And people sometimes struggle, and we can talk about this, because what I was trying to say there is that when I left the service, and you've got this thing that follows you around, and this oh, you're Stars, you're fucking Special Forces, you've done this, and you've got that, and look at what you've achieved, and that's you. It's like, no.
Yeah, the definition.
Fucking stops. That's, we've done that.
Mm.
that needs fucking parking. It needs it needs the attention. It needs the recognition and everything else. But that's the past. You know, I need, there's a line in the sand now. We start again. And for me, it was, I'm starting again. And it's probably the same for Louis. And we need to be the best at what we do now in this new field, in technical outdoor clothing and through dark in particular. So that was the professional bit in terms of business. Right, we're new to this, but let's apply everything that we've learned previously, use the good things and the bad and learn from those and apply it now into business, something that's new, and surround ourselves with good people. And then personally for me, what can I do personally that's going to push me? Okay, I'm physically fit, I'm active. Keeping fit is an integral part of a special forces operator. You know, you have to be fit. You know, it's obvious. You have to be fit to do the job. You know, it's a very physically intense job. And the pressure there is built through not so much, you know, you wanting to do it, it's having to do it. Like, I can't let other people fucking down here. Like, I have to stay physically fit, because it's one thing, you letting yourself down and you getting shot, you can deal with that.
Yeah.
But getting somebody else shot because you're incapable or because you fucking slacked off and you're not physically fit or whatever, is, it's a big no-no. So there's those professional standards that that are, you know, pressed upon you from the very start. So, and that bleeds out again into your civilian, now civilian world, which is a whole new, it's a whole new world, it's a whole fucking new world.
I know,
yeah. And that's a different, that's a whole fucking different beast. So what I thought was the hardest thing that I've ever done physically, mentally, was at the time.
Yeah.
And back to your very original question, what's the hardest thing you've ever fucking done? Fucking business.
Then it becomes that.
Fuck, wow. Yeah, yeah. You know, wow. I don't think me or Louis were prepared for just how difficult this was going to be, you know.
Really?
And we can, and we can sort of jump into that and dive into it. But for me personally, what I also wanted to do was, yes, I'm going to keep training and keep on that physical, you know, I still want to keep physically fit, because I think that's a huge part of being successful for yourself. How can you look after anybody else if you're not looking after yourself?
100%.
And it was jiu-jitsu for me. So I started, I got introduced to jiu-jitsu. And it's that white belt mentality that I talk about in the book, about starting something, snakes and ladders, back to the bottom.
Yeah,
yes, I'm physically very fit. I can run marathons. I can run around with packs on. I've done all this, you know, and I'm in the gym. I'm very comfortable. I'm very fit. I'm very active and accomplished. Let's do something that I'm not very fucking good at. Let me put a white belt around my fucking waist. And that belt system's there for a specific reason. And jiu-jitsu is very unique in its own way, because you earn, you absolutely earn every bit of tape that goes on that belt and every belt thereafter, you know. Yeah. And there's only five belts. There's, you know, white belt, blue belt, purple, brown and black. And it takes about 10 years to get to black belt. But you know that people have earned those fucking belts, you know. And it's, and it signifies, it signifies the effort and time and consistency and determination that you've had to keep, to keep, to keep going at something. And you're shit. You know, you think, I'm all right, I'm fit, I'm active, I've boxed, I've done kickboxing, I can look after myself. And you roll for the first time. The only thing I can liken it to is drowning above water. It is such a bit. I don't know if you didn't try jiu-jitsu or anything like that.
I haven't. No, I was going to ask you, is it the same as Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
It's Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Okay, so it's become a friend of mine. One of our guests, a lady called Larata Leon. So she trains up in London with like Roger Gracie. So you know these
guys. I've been to that school, yeah.
Right, okay. And she was, she's got, you know, a hell of a story where she was essentially trafficked as a teenage girl. But captured like twice. And you know, she was telling us a story on the podcast of like these two guys following her down the street in London once she'd, you know, like moved back to this country, started a new life, etc. She, I could hear these steps, I knew these guys were following me, and she's a black belt now, and she goes, you know, she just turned around to these guys and just say, can I just warn you, I am a weapon and I will cause you unbelievable physical and mental pain if you carry on with what you're about to do. And they just like looked at each other, laughed, went for her, and she goes, literally just
brilliant.
Finished with them.
Brilliant. And because it's applicable as well, it is, it's not one of those woo-woo fucking martial arts that have been caught out. And that's why the UFC was great, wasn't it? Because it put it, and that's why it was, that's why people loved it so much.
Yeah,
and still
yeah.
love it to this day, to watch the modern day gladiators fighting. But jiu-jitsu was brilliant. And it's a new skill that you had to learn. And you have to learn it. And the only way to do it is to keep turning up consistently and to do it and to get better through the doing and the understanding of the techniques and the knowledge and everything else. And I fucking loved that. And it helped me massively when I left. Because when you leave, you attach so much of who you are and what you used to do and your person to what you used to do. And it's very difficult to then change and adapt to a new life and a new person and business as well. And Louis, you know, we're out and we're trying all these different things. And it's, look, our story is not dissimilar to any startup story. You know, you start with an idea, a creative idea, you put pen to paper, you whiteboard it. How do we do it? You need a bit of naivety, don't you? That, how hard can it be? It's just technical clothing.
Otherwise you wouldn't do it.
Let's go and do it. You know, and then fucking wow, with this mad whirlwind that we're on now, it's phenomenal. You know, looking back, but there's definitely things that we've applied from our military and our kind of mindset that have really, really set us apart and helped in terms of the growth. And it's a short period, you know, we're six years in now, and the business is doing really well. And but I'm not just putting this on me and Louis as well, but you need that kind of foundation and the things that we've learned and everything else that we've transferred across the business, which we can go into more detail, but people, you know, surrounding yourself by incredible people. When I was in the Special Forces, you know, each person, you know, they're great. We're like Swiss Army knives of people, but we're force multipliers. You know, we would do so much. And that's why such a small footprint, a fighting force, could do so much, because each person was the person. They've all gone through this, well, what is arguably the best job interview in the world, selection.
Yeah.
And it's there and it's set. The standards don't change for that reason, because they're looking for a specific person, an individual, somebody that's very physically and fit and mentally robust and everything else. But also your ability to learn and take on information, the curve is fucking like that, you know, and you're constantly learning new skills, and the skills are very varied and weird and wonderful, from fucking picking locks to blowing doors off buildings to, you know, high level trauma for people to long range shooting, close range shooting to, you know, all these weird and wonderful courses that you do that add strings to your bow that ultimately place you back into the squadron now times 40, 50 people. You know, it's brilliant. It really is good.
So let's talk a little bit about business, and I'm interested in vision of when you started it. You talk about feeling a huge sense of purpose when you're in the military. Interested to know, one, was that the case the whole time that you were there? Did that change like towards the end? And two, do you feel a similar sense of purpose with Louis and yourselves and through Doug?
Yeah, good question. So for the most part, yes, that purpose thing, but it changed. My purpose was selfish. It was driven by my own purpose and my own wants and needs, those selfish things that I wanted to do for me. I want to be a Special Forces soldier for me. Yeah. And then you get into the service, and then you understand the purpose is bigger than you. You know, you're just a part to play within that organization, that ultimately the purpose is good, you know, to do good. You know, across multiple kind of theatres of war and strategic governmental kind of reasons as well. And you feel that purpose and you feel like you're a part of something good. But then, you know, I did so much in 10 years, well, 13 years total, but 10 years were in the Special Forces. My four more formative years were in Special Forces. But, and I did so much, and I'd kind of ticked all these boxes, and I was a lot of close shaves, I've been blown up and shot, all these kind of things where you just think, fuck, you know. And it's the best job in the world, but it's the most selfish job in the world as well. You know, it takes a tremendous strain on families and relationships and everything else. So, you know, I then took the decision to leave. You know, Lou was leaving as well. He was leaving for different reasons. He was medically discharged with his back, but we were both ready, you know. And I remember sitting on a DZ at drop zone parachuting in America with Louis at Starbucks in the middle of nowhere, Blythe, in Arizona, in the desert, and talking about what the outside world would look for us. And I absolutely believe that you have to have a purpose, something to aim towards. You have to. Otherwise, if you don't make a decision, someone will make a decision for you. Somebody 100%. Will go, not a problem. You can't make your mind up. Come over here and do this. And then by the time you realize or understand, things are getting planned for you. And it starts small, then becomes big. So for me and Louis, it was like, right, what do we want to do? What do we like doing? What do we want to do? Okay, what started out, probably looking back now in hindsight, as a lifestyle brand, something that we enjoyed doing, being outside and wearing, you know, we'd been afforded all the best clothing and equipment whilst we were in the service, but we were still quite critical of how it was performing and thought we could do it better. So it's okay, we like a bit of that, like this. We love being outdoors. We love pushing ourselves physically and mentally. We want to create a brand. You know, we've got a very, very authentic, credible, cool story here with Through Dark. There's nobody else that has done this from our world, from Special Forces in the UK, that have set up a technical clothing company, but also have the brand, the authenticity and everything else behind it that's underpinning the story. So Through Dark was kind of born from that idea. You know, in my front room, being in my front room, we had a long-term borrow whiteboard from the military, and we started out. We've still got a picture of that, and it's not too fucking. It's not very far away from where we are right now.
Really? Yeah, that's interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stuff's wild. Year two, take over the world. Year three, flagships. He's like, no. That's just you don't know. You only know what you know. But but for the most part, it is. We've stayed very true to our original brand identity and core and an idea of what we wanted to do and who we wanted to be. And we haven't gone off track too much. You know, we've stuck very true to who we are. And we wanted to operate in this space of being super technical and credible. You know, that's through us, the co-founders, me and Louis, climbing and doing everything ourselves. So not only do we design, develop and test, you know, all this clothing ourselves, we're showing people that we're doing it. We're not just saying it, we're doing it. You know, we're not just standing by our clothes, we're standing in it. You know, as cliched as that sounds, that's what we're doing. You know, we designed the summit suits and, you know, I'm climbing up the mountains and Louis's doing the stuff as well. He's over to, you know, climbing Mont Blanc and doing all this stuff. Nims did his stuff as well, you know, at the time. He's gone off and done his own stuff now. But no, it's me and Louis. It's not Nims. It's not all these other people. Yeah. It's me and Louis, you know, creating this idea and this vision. Mm. You know, these are the people who've worn the clothing and done the stuff and ultimately showed how technically capable the clothing is. But it was kind of born of our idea and our purpose and our drive to take this to where it needs to go. You know, we've had great help from other people, Foxy and Ann and all these lads that we had a great network that had social media profiles and followings that have helped ultimately in terms of a business and how you market and everything else and the TV shows and all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, it all comes back around to what we want to do, the goal, the vision, the purpose, what we want ThruDark to be, and we fucking stuck vehemently to that as well, and we've not veered off course. And then you've got the product. If the product's shit, the product's shit. It don't matter how much, you can cover a fucking turd in glitter, it's still a turd.
Yeah.
And we were very conscious of the product being correct and being right from the very start, and Louis's done a lot of stuff there on the product side of things as well, and the product team, and as you get bigger and the company grows, you start bringing people in to offload and you know, you learn that through management and leadership and everything else in terms of, you know, you're doing the doing yourself up to a point, you're spinning plates, you know, at the beginning, it's me and Louis, we're fucking doing everything, and and then you start getting a person on, somebody to help with this, somebody to help with that. And before you know it, we're now up to 35, 40 staff. Yeah, so it's been a crazy fucking journey. A really, really difficult, crazy journey. And again, back to your original question, the hardest thing, fucking business. You know, it is difficult. It is fucking hard.
And what's the hardest thing that you found thus far within that? Is it
all of
recruitment?
It.
All of it. Well, when I interviewed Jim Krieger from Jimmy Joe's Coffee, and we had a conversation, he went, "If I'd known now what I knew back then,
you wouldn't fucking do it.
No way I would do it.
You wouldn't fucking do it.
I was like, you wouldn't do it. Even selling out to Britvic, no chance. I would never put myself through 13 years of this. You know.
And that's the thing. Like a lot of people, a lot of people want what you have, but people aren't prepared to do what you've done to fucking get there. And that's not just business. That's fucking like that. That is, that's all right, Lewis Hamilton or you know, all these professional footballers.
Yeah.
But if you fucking thrust them into what they've done since they've been that big, all the training, all the sacrifices that you have to make to enable success, 99.9% of the population need not apply.
No.
Because they can't do it. And they're not willing to do it. They're not willing to push themselves into that. And don't get me wrong, when we left, we were all chips in, all investment, physically, mentally. Me and Louis were like, we had that conversation with each other. We're in this for the long haul. Like, we're making a commitment to each other that we're in together to do this and see it through to the end. And what is the end? We don't know.
I was going
to
say.
We don't know what that end is.
You didn't put a time limit on it.
No, you don't. Okay. And it's similar to your Special Forces career. You start selection and you go, I'm invested in this. 110% physically, mentally, I'm invested to get to the end. And you know what the end is on selection because it's the belt, the beret.
Yeah.
And badge, but you also know that that's just the beginning of your career. And that could be 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, and you don't know where that end is. And different things happen at different periods throughout that journey in the military, and the same with business, you know, and things change and people and everything else, and then you get investment and then you grow and then you're kind of, you get intelligent people into the business, which, you know, we're forever grateful for. If you want to go fast, you know, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And then who you pull around your table, be very careful, you know, who you select to kind of bring into your world those trusted opinions, because you get pushed and pulled in all these different directions, you know, in life and in business and everything else. And you just have to have that discussion between yourselves. And I was very lucky. When I left the service, I had Louis, you know, to lean into, you know.
He's gone on a similar journey. He's gone on a similar journey.
And that first year, 2 years, you're into the unknown. There's a lot of pressure, you know, financially. I've got a family to support and everything else. And you've got the mortgages. You've still got all this other stuff. And you're working a little bit on the side to fucking pay that. And fucking shit, we need a bit more over here. And we've been incredibly fortunate with our founding investor, Steve Clark, who's been, you know, pivotal in our success. You know, he's been nothing but supportive of us, you know.
What do you think he saw in you? And you obviously don't know the answer to that, but
I do. Okay. I do. He's told us it's us. It was us. And it's, again, cliched. People invest in people.
Yeah.
And if you're investing your fucking hard-earned money and cash into an idea or proposition, the idea, yes, has to have legs. It has to have meaning. It has to make sense to some part. But business, and I know this now in business 16 years, looking forward, if I was investing in something, you don't necessarily know what the end goal is for that product. You can go, yeah, it's a good product, I get it, for some stuff. But it's like, who's behind it, and are they invested in it? Yeah. And are they passionate? Do they have authenticity? Are they credible? Can I trust them? Are these people that I can trust, first and foremost? You know, not just with your money, but in general.
Yeah,
you know, are they going to see this through? Do they know what they're getting into? You know, and it is that. When we first set up and we met Jeff Griffin, a British designer who helped us out in the initial stages in the beginning and introduced us to factories in Italy and et cetera, et cetera. And we did some initial designs with him. A great, designer in his own right and still to this day. Shout out to Jeff and Karina at, you know, at Loveland Farm. And he's got his own product line as well. But I remember him sitting us down and saying, like, guys, this is what are you doing? Like, this is fucking hard. Similar to your conversation with Jimmy's Iced Coffee, like, because he's gone all the way through this and been involved in this world for years and was like, I wouldn't recommend this. Really? I honestly would not recommend this world, this outdoor market world, the technical clothing. It is fucking hard. Very, very
hard.
You
probably liked hearing that, didn't you?
Yeah. And part of me was like, I'm not scared of a challenge.
Yeah.
But you can't, it's like, you can't tell somebody how hard something is until they do it. It's probably, I've never been pregnant, obviously, but imagine as a woman telling a woman.
Kids up, isn't
yeah,
it?
And like raising no kids. Nobody tells you. And you tell people, you have that funny look on your face and that laugh where you go, it's hard, mate. And they go, what's it like? It's fucking hard.
Yeah.
And
how then, hard can it be?
But it's also very rewarding, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's the most rewarding thing that you can do.
Absolutely.
And you're the master of your own ship. I've always wanted to be the master of my own ship, my own destiny. I want that. I want that on me. If I fuck up, it's on me. Mm. I don't want to blame other people. I want it to go, what can I learn from that? And I don't want to go, oh, fuck, it was their fault and this happened and they did that. No. It's extreme ownership and it's on me. And me and Louis, we set together, we set our stall up, and I've been incredibly lucky to have somebody of Louis' caliber to see this through as well. And we're very similar but very different as well, which absolutely complemented and worked very well for us in terms of the business and what sort of we oversee everything, but we've sort of gone into our own roles and responsibilities in terms of I'm covering sort of brand and marketing and sales and Louis' product operations, you know, so it works very well.
And that's interesting that you're saying, but different. So does your definition of what success is ultimately going to be for Through Dark the same or different?
I mean, what defines success? I think and success for me, now I'm still wet behind the ears. I'm 40 in January, so next month I'm big 4-0. If you'd have asked me what success is 10 years ago, it would be very different to where I am now, and I suspect very different to where it will be and what my definition will be in 10 years' time. But success, as I sit here right now, is first and foremost being healthy and happy. And my, again, cliche, but looking after my family, looking after my loved ones and my friends, making sure that I'm mentally in a very good place and successful. You know, success for me is waking up in the morning, swinging my legs out of bed and being content with what I have and where I'm heading and what the vision is for the brand. And that's my purpose. So my professional purpose is nailed on. Yep. And success within Through Dark and the business, those daily successes that compound into the monthly successes, and then, you know, then you look at, clearly for a business to be successful, it has to work, it has to make money, you know, it has to generate cash, and it also has to, you have to make sure that everybody else is happy within that organization, which is, again, very fucking difficult.
Very
difficult. And a big part of leadership and being a co-founder is that. And not everybody can be happy at the same time. Mm. And happiness is such a strange thing because that's just a feeling. You know, you can't be happy all the time. You shouldn't expect to be happy all the time. And you're not broken if you're not happy all the time. You know, it's like being sad. You don't want to be sad. It's just an emotion. Mm. You know, it's a point or a physical point in time and a feeling. But success right now for me is all those things. It's looking after my family, first and foremost, my friends, myself as well. Am I successful, i.e. am I physically fit and healthy and happy and everything else, or doing at least as much as I can to enable that? Mm-hmm. And then business-wise, am I hitting the things and doing the things I want to do from a professional standpoint in terms of business? You know, are we leading from the front? Are we being authentic? Are we being credible? Are we living by our values that we've sort of instilled within ThruDark? You know, and that for me is success. And then if we can have fun along the way, that absolutely must underpin everything in terms of success. If you're not fucking enjoying it or having a good time along the way, what's the fucking point?
What is the point?
And a lot of people struggle. They get so invested, you know, emotionally and financially invested into a business. And sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees. You know, you're too close to the coalface. You're too close. Mm. You're too in it, involved.
Yeah.
To step back and go, fuck it. I think we spoke earlier before about who sold Lush. They sold for $1 billion. It's a billion pound
business. Yeah.
Company. Mm. Haven't sort of to step back and gone, whoa, wait a minute. Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck. Success, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or is it?
It's interesting, isn't it? And I think it's that with goal setting, isn't it? It's like, yeah, done, next. It's like whether that's your mindset.
But we're always, it's fucking excellence creep, isn't it? We're always moving the fucking goalposts.
Yeah.
We're always moving the goalposts.
Yeah.
And when I left the special forces, it's a decision you don't take lightly, but with everything, we had something to aim towards and ThruDark and the goal. We knew what we were doing and why we were leaving. I was leaving for what I felt was the right reasons, and it turns out it was and has been. But I always had in the back of my mind that if it doesn't work out, like, And I'm not advocating plan Bs, because I think you shouldn't fucking have a plan B. You should just stick to fucking plan A and execute. But
the same,
in my head, I sort of was like, well, if it doesn't work out, I can go back with my tail between my leg and a little bit of a bruised ego back into what, rewind 10 years ago, was all I wanted to do and be, special forces. Mm. You know, and also look at people that are trying to get to where you were and are in special forces. You'd literally chop off your left arm to get into special forces, because that's everything you want to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not a bad slide back. Yes, you might see it as a snake, but it's only a small snake.
Yeah.
And then you can readjust and go back onto where you're not hitting the big one.
Yeah.
But business is like that, isn't it? You know, there's lots of wins, small wins, and there's lots of failures, and it's all about how you learn and fail forward and understand, and how do you adjust yourself, you know, and your perception of that situation as well.
Mm. Now, I love the title of the book, The Hard Road Will Take You Home, and the story, I won't ruin it for people, but the story on why you called it The Hard Road. I mean, I was literally ready to sign up at my age to go to go do it with her. And, it's really well described, like the voice and the kind of resonance of the guy who's actually...
Goosebumps again when I think about it.
And something you mentioned in the book again, the jumping out of the plane at night, and I thought, that's a pretty good way to describe starting a business, isn't it, really?
It's a leap of faith, isn't it? And we talk about that.
Yeah.
And that's a really nice sort of segue again into something I want to talk about, which is linked to the very first chapter about taking a leap of faith. And people will put up their own barriers, they'll put up their own excuses, and they are fucking excuses. However you dress them up, I can't do that because of this, and I don't want to do that because of that. I'm not ready to do this because of this. And I heard it the other day on a podcast, I think it was Chris Williamson, talked about, thinking about doing the thing isn't doing the thing, planning to do the thing isn't doing the thing, telling people you're going to do the thing isn't doing the fucking thing. You have to do the fucking thing. And you have to take that leap of faith. You have to do it. Mm. You have to commit. And most people are worried about what other people will think of them. And when you ask somebody, what's your biggest fear? It's like a preset response is fear of failure.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you break that down, though, and you think, well, what is fear of failure? Why are you scared of failing? No, you're not scared. You're just scared of what other people's perceptions of you will be, your loved ones, and how they will feel and think towards you. Like, you were all guilty of it. You like think competitions for jiu-jitsu. You think, oh, I don't want to do a because I've got a public profile, and if I lose, a lot of pressure there. And
but it's just a lesson, isn't it?
It's a fucking lesson.
It's a lesson.
It's so small.
So you don't learn.
You worry so much, and you're constrained by other people's thoughts, which ultimately hasn't got fuck all to do with you or your life. It has no bearing on where you're heading and what you're doing in
life.
And
maybe it means we're also frigging insecure of what people think about us.
Massively.
It's this, and you mentioned it in the book, and we talked about it beforehand, but, procrastination, what advice would you give to someone who's, thinking of leaving their job? Doesn't have to be military, obviously, but, to start their own business, they're procrastinating, they're not taking that leap of faith, as you call it, so well. What should they do?
Well, again, it's a good question, and why a lot of people get wrapped around the axles with things, because they think too much ahead. Yeah. They think too far in the future before they've even broken everything down. And parts of the book break this down as well in terms of the chapters and how they're formulated, and then giving you examples and real life experiences from me, my life, my time.
It,
so my life, my military experience, and then business now, and kind of how it all then wraps up, and you've got the action points at the end. But if you look at a military term or an ism, is the battle prep, and the first sort of chapters of the book is battle prep. And that you do this in the military, you prepare for battle. It's battle prep. Okay, what's the mission? The mission is to do this. Okay, well, let's work back from that. How long have we got to before we need to execute that on that mission? Okay, who have I got at my disposal, in terms of people? What are their, where are their strengths and weaknesses? And you can then apply this to business as well. Let's say it's a business setting or perspective. And I think I give examples in the book as well in terms of setting up a tattoo studio.
If
you look
right.
at stuff like, well, what's the business that I want to do and set up? What do I need to get there? Don't sort of start overthinking everything and, well, I've got to do this and I've got to just break everything down systematically. It's about that, taking that step, isn't it? And going, okay, how much can I do before I have to take that leap of faith? Taking it back to that example, jumping out of a parrot plane, you don't just suddenly end up on the back of a plane and fucking the green light comes on, the guy gives you the thumbs up and you jump out of the plane. It's broken down through training, through experience, your kit and equipment, your checks, everything that you're wearing, your altimeters, everything is checked, triple checked, it's safe. You do practice jumps, you do dry drills, dry jumps, then you do a smaller jump, higher jump, more kit, more equipment, night vision, oxygen, higher, nighttime, operational, go. Do you know what I mean? So there's all this thing has got to be broken down. And it's not, I'm not a fan of blind faith, just running into a mission, an operation, and let's fucking go, pop smoke straight up the middle. That's not what it's about. It's about preparing yourself mentally and physically, and what can you do? Write things down. Write a plan of action of what you want to do. And it sounds basic, but most people can't even fucking plan a day. If you say to somebody, what are you doing tomorrow? They'll go, I'm going to work. Well, is that it? But what are you actually doing? What do you mean, I'm going to work? Okay, talk me through your routine in the morning. Very similar to your 75 thing. What's the first thing you do when you wake up? Break your hour down into 15-minute slots. How could you be more productive? What would you do? Well, the first 15, I'll jump in the shower. Right, brilliant. I have all my clothes laid out, set out. Right, okay, and what's the next thing you do? Well, I go downstairs, I prepare my breakfast, and this is the routine I do for my breakfast, whether that's vitamins, all the bits and pieces. Okay, now what do you do? Next 15 minutes, I don't do this. You might meditate, stretch, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, it's like get moving. I get out of the house, I prepare everything, breakfast, feed the dog, out, walk, into the office, and I train. Like that non-negotiable for me is I've got a period of time now from 7:30 till about 9:15 where I'm training, I'm moving, physically I'm moving. That's jiu-jitsu or it's the gym or I'm out for a run. And that's kind of, I'm doing it. So I don't set any meetings or anything's up before that 9 o'clock period. It's kind of hard, fast for me. I'm not doing anything. Don't try and contact me or set up a meeting before 9 o'clock because I have to do that.
Yep.
So what do I need to do to enable that to happen in success? So work that and break that bit down. So even before I'm just going to work. Before I've done that, I've already put all these other things in place before that to set myself up for success and enable that. And once I get into work, I'm showered, I'm in, 9 o'clock, breakfast, shake, things that you take, brilliant, done. Right, now you're breaking up your day. What's the first sort of quarter? And also look at yourself, when am I most productive? I'm shit after about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Gone,
I'm fucking, you've lost me. So I need to fit as much, I need to eat the frog. I need to do the hardest things first that require the most fucking cognitive brain power and load. Do them at the beginning, all the meetings, get all the things that set yourself up, set your day up, in your diary, get everything written down. Brilliant. Get to 3 o'clock. Right, I know I'm going to be hanging. Right, so what can I do? It's either exercise or you get your winding down to finish the day.
Yeah.
From there, it's, well, I mean, to now your family, whatever that is. For me, it's kid, right, I've got to go pick the kids up, do tea with the kids, spend that sort of valuable time with those guys, bath and bed routine, kids, books, do all that. Okay, but now what are you doing after? Well, now, it's, again, you can do more self-development. You can read your book for 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You can do stretching, or you can train, or you can do whatever you need or want to do at that period. But, and then keep stacking that, habit stack. Each day, keep doing it, and then plan your weekends or somebody will fuck it, or your missus will plan it for you. You know, have these things set up, and it's kind of like, I know it's the week, people, it's the weekend, I want to chill out.
Yeah.
But go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, weekend or fucking not. And it's so important to you physically in terms of like how much benefit that adds to your brain and your cognitive function, you know, cut the things out that fucking interfere with that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the drinking and all the other bullshit, all the stuff that's not conducive to helping you out.
For day, don't you?
You lose that shit.
I refuse to do that.
And you train in the morning. I'll say at the weekend, I'll say I'm going for a run. And I'll commit to that. And if I can't, I can do it myself. I know I can. But commit with other people. I'm meeting friends for a run at fucking 7:30 in the morning, and then I'm doing a run that might be 5K, 10K, and I'm jumping in the sea, whether or not it's fucking summer or winter. We're getting in, and we're putting ourselves through that.
Yeah, I went in with your mate Jay Morton on Monday.
Brilliant. Yeah. It's getting nippy now as well.
It's cold. Like we've got a group. We started during lockdown, and. Again, it's the community. It's seeing your mates in the morning that you're doing something together.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally is through dark at the moment because we go at 6:30 and you can't even see where the frigging sea is.
Yeah.
And that just becomes another difficult thing to put yourself to do.
Yeah, but how good do you feel once you've done it?
But you just feel fucking amazing. You feel like you've had a triple espresso, basically.
That is within everyone's capability to do that.
It is. Absolutely.
Why can you not do that? Why can you not set your alarm?
Because
people don't want to fucking do it. No. If they're honest to themselves, and it's easy to throw fucking stones at other people and go, oh, he's a weirdo.
Yeah.
He's fucking, oh, he's obsessed.
Yeah.
What's the thing that innovates? Obsessed is the word, like, the lazy use. Like, it is to define people that are fucking disciplined.
Yeah. Oh, I had another one, which, are you having a midlife crisis? It's like, that's hilarious. Because I decided to run a marathon between the seats. It's like, what are you talking
about? To be a better
about?
Version of myself, you know.
I haven't got the red Ferrari part outside. What are you on about?
I don't get it.
But look, I'm aware of your time, my friends. Wanted to ask, to finish up, what's the one thing that's enabled you to screw it, just do it, leave the military, launch and grow a successful business in Three Dark?
People. Yeah,
and
I mean that in two ways. One is the external pressure, which we all need. Pressure's a privilege, don't look at it as a negative. So the pressure from family and everyone, friends, to be successful, but also the people within the organisation, the business that allow success, that are ultimately your fuel to success. Because without good people in the business, you cannot be successful. I don't care what anybody says. You need like really, really, really good, driven, motivated people. And that's one of the hardest things to find when you're an entrepreneur, 100%. Is to find people that are just as passionate about what they're doing and why they're doing it for, ultimately, for
and
the business, for your business. and fucking keep hold of those people and reward them as well. Mm. And tell them just how good they are and be thankful and recognise that your success is a massive part of those other people.
Yeah, I love that. And look, to finish up, anybody wants to connect with you, they can obviously go to any good bookseller and buy The Hard Road, we'll take you home. But for anyone else interested in Through Dark or anything else that you're currently involved in.
Yeah, so it's the usual sort of social media platforms from Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. It's Through Dark or Through Dark Official. My personal one is Staz Through Dark. Louis is Louis Through Dark. It's websites and bits and pieces as well. We are, I think, 98% D2C, so website really, but no, thank you, thanks for having me on, thanks to everybody that supported me as well, personally as well and professionally, and my friends and family as well.
Amazing, really enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot, appreciate it.
Thanks for watching this episode of Screw It, Just Do It. Let me know what you thought of it in the comments below this video, as this episode helped move you closer to where you want to be. All that I ask is that if you enjoyed this episode and that it's moved you closer to getting to where you want to be, that you share this episode so that it helps one other person do just the same. Just ask yourself what small action will move you forward to get you from where you are, then screw it and just do it. Until next time.